Hi, this is Damien O'Doherty. Welcome to the Center Maryland The Lobby podcast. We are blessed today to have Christina Johnson, who's really like one of our state of Maryland's most prominent entrepreneurs. She is the CEO of Standard Wellness Maryland, which is making the first cannabis cultivation operation in the United States of America with a Black and Latina majority owner. So that's pretty special space to be in. Christina, welcome.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, and I'm thankful for the folks who sort of forged the path before me. It's kind of amazing. I'd say dope, but you know, that's kind of funny considering we're talking about cannabis. But yeah, I'm thankful, grateful to be here.
So talk to me. I'd love for you to give. We got a big legislative and executive and sort of lobbying audience, obviously. So I'd love to give you a chance to talk about both Standard Wellness and then also your role as the vice chairperson of the Maryland Wholesale Medical Cannabis Trade Association, also known as CanMed.
Yeah. So I'll get started, I guess, with giving you a little bit of background about Standard Wellness Maryland, and then I'll jump into my role at our Wholesalers Association here in Maryland, if that's all right. So I started this company back in, 2018, formalized it in 2019 in pursuance of licensure through House Bill 2, which incentivized minorities and women to engage in the cannabis sector. And I was actually tipped off to this amazing sector and the opportunities that existed in it back in 2017. And so the idea was birthed at that time. We started this great company, and I partnered with Standard Wellness, who was actually out in Ohio at the time. They were the first vertically integrated and operational entity in the state there. They were just getting started. We had some very similar values. We were, committed to community engagement and collective wellness and wealth building too, of course. And we decided, hey, I think this would be a neat opportunity to partner. They could demonstrate past performance since they were up and running. And, we hit the ground and formed this company. Like I said, the rest is history. We were awarded in April of 2022. We were actually the last cultivator in the state of Maryland to be awarded. And it's a really exciting time for us. I've been really, really amazed with sort of the rapid growth in our sector. But here in Maryland, as you know, we just went recreational in November. That was great. I was able to help advocate for that through Maryland Wholesalers Association and joined the board earlier this year. I worked very closely with all my board members as the vice chair of MedCan. And so what we're doing right now is, preparing for adult use. Obviously, that's the priority.
We've done this whole referendum. We've done the politics. The state has said we want to recreationalize the use of marijuana. But then there's this whole panoply of regulations and rules that has to be promulgated to make it all solid and certain. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. We have the General Assembly has this incredible cannabis work group exploring the various aspects of the adult use market and how legalization can be sort of effectively actualized. And so they're fleshing out the details of taxation and how to bring the product to the market safely. So they're considering public health and safety and licensing, and all of this legwork will serve as the context for additional legislation passed or regulations in our market. And so there's still a lot of work to be done. And as you know, I'm sure, that work group had a meeting just this week to discuss a new study that dropped. There was an article in the Post that dropped and, explored a bit about our market and use in this region. And so there's a lot to be done by CanMed. We've certainly got a lot of work ahead of us this year.
So CanMed understands sort of how this industry has evolved better than anybody. And so it's making equity a big piece of its legislative agenda. Talk to me what that means to you, somebody who's been a sort of a lifetime entrepreneur that could have selected, you know, like you were magna cum laude at where did you go to college? Caught the magna cum laude.
Yeah.
It was Hampton College, right?
Virginia. Hampton University. And then also my grad school program. I was a bit of a nerd back then, Damien. I had fun. I was a partying nerd. But yeah.
No, I'm not going to stop there. Maryland Daily Record, 40 under 40. She's been on Fox News, all the DC affiliates. So, but really, you had a real estate background. You were the executive director of Conscious Capitalism. You know, it all aligns. But, you know, why did you choose, why did you choose this industry to be? You could have picked anything.
Yeah. So there's certainly a storied past there. My dad was a criminal defense attorney. So he was sensitive to and familiar with all of the issues within the criminal justice system that sometimes disproportionately affected people of color, and in particular men, in his case. That's what he focused on. And with his own law practice, you know, I guess I witnessed his incredible work ethic and many of his peers who were small Black-owned businesses as well, or business owners as well in this DC region. And so, you know, I think entrepreneurialism was a fit. I don't know that I knew that early on, but I saw how businesses were built from a very early age. And then, you know, my mom was a Cuban immigrant. She came here in 1960 and she demonstrated an incredible perseverance and sort of an ability to quickly learn and compassion for the underserved. And both were cancer survivors and cannabis users for pain management. And so I think that sort of with that makeup, if you will, and having worked in the for-profit sector and the nonprofit sector and cross-trained quite a bit, there were all of the makings of putting a business together. And I've had some great contacts and friends who have been resources in this process, but I had somebody suggest that I look at the sector, and this was back in 2017 before I started the company. You know, I toured the country. I traveled out to Vegas. I came out to Colorado and Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and looked at all of these incredible facilities, learned about the business operations that very, very strong entrepreneurs had built. And, you know, I thought, hey, I can combine my industry experience and start affecting legislative agendas around cannabis equity. It was something that was really interesting to me. And I thought that it was important as a woman and as a woman of color to have representation. And then you dropped in Maryland and there was a clear path forward for, again, pursuing licensure. So that's how I'd sort of got into this space. And, you know, it's been a whirlwind ever since. As you know, cannabis is ever evolving. It's still a somewhat nascent sector. So it's really dynamic. And certainly there is no dull day in cannabis as an entrepreneur. We've got some great regulators here in the state, and we're working closely with them through the association to make sure that we have a very stable and safe market, but that it's also sustainable.
Let's talk about the safety issue, because that's kind of astonishing to me. I had Joe Bryce, the legendary Annapolis lobbyist who represents CanMed, on, and he was voicing some concern about the illicit market.
Sure.
And so I'm trying to understand that a little bit. That means even in a market where you have a recreational environment, the legislature, the people have all approved that because the prices are so high or the quality so good that people are allowed to come in, or not people aren't allowed to come in, but people do come in with a subpar product, or what, how does that black market work when you're in a recreational environment?
Yep. Let's talk about it. So I'm going to make it super simple. And I know that there are very sophisticated and highly intelligent listeners on this podcast, but you know, I'm going to oversimplify it for easy digestion. Look, if you're running a business, Damien, that costs you $100,000 to run, let's say a month, right? That's slow, but let's say it costs you $100,000 to run. And your business is legal. You pay taxes, you've got overhead and expenses associated with that overhead. You've got healthcare and all of these other things per regulations and the law that you're required to have, you know, and you're competing with someone whose business costs $20,000 a month to run because they're not paying taxes. They don't have the same sort of overhead. They don't have the same security or testing requirements to ensure that they're a safe product going to market. I mean, who's more competitive, Damien? It's the other person, right? They're paying less. Their margins are going to be larger. And the risk associated with the products that they're putting into our marketplace are larger for all of us, and in particular for consumers, not just the other their competitors, but for consumers as well. There's a huge risk. And so what we really think is important at CanMed, and I would say probably the vast majority of people that you know, are interested in this sector or that are already in the sector would agree, ensuring that we have a safe marketplace is critical. To sustain the market for the business owners, for the legislators involved, but also for the general public, because the long and short of it is, it's not just the user who the product's, you know, affecting, right? If someone consumes cannabis and they're using a product that was brought into the state illegally and that has not been tested, who knows what they're using?
Can I give you a crazy example of that?
Tell me.
You won't believe it. So we were doing a project for hunting and fishing in California, right? So we're trying to figure out how we could expand fishing, mostly the Latino community there, big into fishing. It's a great access point to the outdoors. And we're trying to work with a few foundations about how to like expand that sort of access. But one of the things we came across was this officer for all of the parks in California, John Norris. He told us that gangs from south of the United States would occupy California parkland, which he's in charge of looking at, California wildlands.
Yep.
And you know, he's by like Los Gatos, which is looks like tech companies are right there, you know. And he said in Los Gatos that these gangs would find all this dead wildlife, dead bears, dead cats, dead, big life. Yeah, it's because when they had marijuana grows there in the middle of these public forests and they were dousing it with all the fertilizer, right? And putting all the stuff that was killing wildlife is hurting. That's going on the plant. And then he said, and then John said to me, John Norris, he has a book called The Three Thin Green Line. If you want to check it out, he said, all that stuff goes back to the East Coast in an illicit market. I mean, I was always a fan of cannabis reform and things of that nature. But when I heard that, I was like, my goodness, that's the black market, is that kind of stuff that could be that contaminated? It's mind-blowing.
Absolutely. And he's right. So I'm familiar with John, and he is 100% on point with regards to products that are coming into the state, again, from out of state. That is an illicit trade across state lines. That's also a federal crime when that happens. And these products that are coming in here are not tested.
It's killing bears. That's what I'm telling
people. I mean, literally killing bears. And we think this isn't going to affect people. Right. It absolutely will. And I mean, you could take it one step further beyond just, you know, illicit products coming into the market and affecting the person who consumes it. Those people could go out and they could drive because they don't know what's inside of the product, right? The packaging is inaccurate. They could be taking care of children, you know, so it is so critically important that we have, you know, healthy cannabis, good quality cannabis that's rigorously tested and regulated to ensure, you know, client/patient safety. It's critical.
Talk to me about the Annapolis environment, the legislators, the folks you've been encountering. Seems to be a pretty collaborative environment. Folks who seem to be really working together to find solutions. Maryland's pretty unique legislative environment. Just love to hear somebody who's had so much experience in business. Love to hear sort of your gut reaction to the legislative work that you're involved in.
Yeah. So, you know what, we've got some really incredible folks in Maryland. I spoke earlier about the cannabis referendum and legalization work group. It's chaired by, Luke Clippinger. And he's got about 10 additional work group members that are on the House side who have been working in this space for years. You know, Representative Barnes, we've got Lukey, we've got David Moon out of Montgomery County, C.T. Wilson, who's the chair of another committee, quite frankly, and doing an excellent job at digging into the data that really matters as you legislate. But we've got some really engaged folks who are thinking very carefully about the issues that should be looked at as you roll out adult use, like licensing structure. We spoke a little bit about social equity. We can jump back on that, but licensing structure, they're looking at, safe public health and safety, taxation, which is critical to reduce sort of the burgeoning illicit market as well. You know, low tax rates can combat the illicit market because it allows legal growers to be more competitive. And so these folks have been working, you know, pretty rigorously for the last year at trying to find solutions that are constructive for a sustainable market here in Maryland.
You know, my friend reminded me of this. We were talking about building equity, and we were talking about equity, and then we're looking at each other as two white men. And he said, you know, we should probably take Elijah Cummings kind of defined it best. He said it's like an equalizer. You think this industry can be an equalizer for people of color in the great state of Maryland?
I don't believe in silver bullets. I'm
getting the real answer.
Yeah, I'm not quite as wise as Representative Cummings, but I will say, I think that cannabis is one of the, if not the only industry as a whole that is making intentional concerted efforts to ensure that there is equity.
Right. You don't see that in, like, say, I'm going to throw some industries out there. The software industry. Like, I don't hear that. Right. You know,
software, consumer packaged goods, farming. Look, there isn't any technology. We could healthcare. There isn't one that across the board is saying, look, as we change laws, as we grow businesses, as we look at the economics, we are committed to equity. And in this space, there's an ecosystem of equity that is not and should not be limited to licensing. We've got board participation and engagement. We definitely have ownership. We definitely have licensing, but we also have workforce development. We have reimbursement in the communities. We've got decrim. There is an entire ecosystem that should be considered when we talk about equity. And most people focus on one aspect of this sector being equitable, and that is licensing. But I think that there is so much more than that that we can consider to sort of create an equitable system of business here. And so anyway, yeah, I think that Maryland is committed to equity. I think from the existing business owners, I mean, I've got peers in CanMed that consistently ensure that we're talking about equity. And then, you know, we've got legislators, we've got a very active advocacy community here, and they've been active. I mean, from before the licensure round in 2014 and 15, they were active, not as successful as I'm sure they would have liked to have been at that time, but their persistence has paid off, and legislators are listening, they're paying attention, and they're being proactive with the way that they consider laws and write them. So yeah, I think Maryland is certainly going to be an equitable space. I believe that. But you know, this is not on the back of cannabis as a sector. This is something we should be considering much more broadly and in every industry in this state. You know, I happen to be on the transition committee for Brooke Learman, who's our new comptroller. And this is something that she's put at the forefront of everything she's doing. And it goes into procurement. You know, everything we do, we should be thinking equitably about and how we make opportunities for all people, just not some people.
Well, I feel like I could walk behind you and Brooke Learman and get anything done in the world.
She's pretty amazing too. I tell you, last night's transition committee was one of the best meetings I've ever had. Part of the reason why was I accidentally was playing with the filters, you know, on Zoom and didn't realize people could see me. And I literally was a fox. I had a full nose and ears. It was amazing, but what a great group of people. You know, it's always good to be with a team of committed volunteers and be able to laugh your way through some really complicated and complex subjects. But yeah, it was a good call. She's pretty great.
So when I was reviewing your outstanding career, you know, we talked about magna cum laude from Hampton and the University of Dallas. We talked about leading women by the Daily Record, top 40 under 40 at Hampton. You know, can you talk to me a little bit about your experience with conscious capitalism? Because that is a phrase that we should be hearing more and more about. And I'm sure it informed a lot of your life's work. I'd love to hear about your experience as the ED for Conscious Capitalism.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I think most people hear the term conscious capitalism and they think it's an anomaly. It's sort of a joke. You know, you think it's like those two words don't necessarily go together. But I think that the bottom line for conscious capitalism is that you really have a purpose-driven business. If you think about, you know, conscious capitalism broadly, it's a movement, and it really just advances the practice of free enterprise with the underpinning of these four tenets, and that those are higher purpose, having a stakeholder orientation, not just a shareholder orientation, being a conscious leader and ensuring that that permeates your organization, and then having a conscious culture, which is something obviously that it can start at the top. I think you have to embody it as an executive and as a leader, but it's something that quite frankly can be brought up from within the organization and permeate throughout. And so, you know, I see myself, I hope to be consistently a conscious capitalist. And what that means for me is that I'm mindful about the approach to profit-driven measures in my business and systems of improvement and personal development and business advancement. And I care about sort of the societal impact that I have and the environmental impact that I have in my business. And so, you know, the cool thing about being an executive at Conscious Capitalism was that I got to meet incredible people who were already practicing this.
Talk about some of those names, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I am happy to. So the founder of Conscious Capitalism, one of them was the co-founder of Whole Foods, John Mackey, and he was great. Dan Simons, who's here in Maryland, he's got a few restaurants. He is he's pretty incredible as well, a great executive and leader. But I was able to get to know him quite well. He was on my board. I'm trying to think of right off the top of my head. I could go through my entire board.
That's I just want to give people a sense of what we're talking about. And then you got to go out there and say, hey, look, I'm telling the whole world how to do this as the executive director of this organization. But then you're like, you know, you're like, hold my Diet Coke. I'm going to go do this myself and live a purpose-driven entrepreneurial experience at the highest level at the most talked about industry in one of the most complex states in the union. That's what you decided to do.
Yeah, I think that was the choice. I suppose I did do that. I remember having this conversation with, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Motley Fool.
Met them in Northern Virginia. Great people.
Yeah, that's right. And so David Gardner, who is a co-founder of our chapter of Conscious Capitalism in DC, but he also was a co-founder of the Motley Fool with his brother. He and I had this conversation and he told me early on, Christina, you know, we're going to be fully supportive of you. We certainly want you to stay here. But if you have that opportunity to go out there and be a practitioner of conscious capitalism, that's the best way to teach, you know, and it's the best way to learn too. It's by doing. And so to the extent that I can espouse those values of conscious capitalism and share, you know, I'm learning as I practice. But at the same time, hopefully I'm serving as an example to somebody else who's looking at me. They could be similarly situated. They could not be, but my hope is that I'm sharing with them the ways to be mindful in how they behave and how they live every day.
Christina Johnson, she is the vice chair of CanMed, which is the Maryland Wholesale Medical Cannabis Trade Association. And then she is the CEO of Standard Wellness Maryland. And those were some pretty great last words, but I didn't know if you wanted to give us a little plug for Standard Wellness Maryland or any last words before we let you get back to your entrepreneurial experience.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I have any super wise, famous last words. I would I would say to anybody listening, first of all, I really appreciate the diversity of thought that we have in this sector. Again, from the advocates who have been such incredible proponents of social equity and health and safety to, you know, our engagement with the police and our engagement with legislatures and our engagement with small business owners who are in ancillary businesses or budding entrepreneurs who want to come into the space. And with my peers on this board, you know, I'm so thankful for the diversity of thought that we have and the civility that we have to be able to have healthy conversations and come to the middle with solutions that work for the greater good for the most people. You know, I think Howard Schultz of Starbucks said it best, and it totally characterizes cannabis. You know, we have to be able to risk more than others think is safe and dream more than others think is practical. And so I would encourage anybody listening, you know, we're going to have to risk a little bit more as we flesh out these regs. Some things are going to be uncomfortable and it may not feel safe. And we've got to dream more than what other people think is practical. Because that's the only way that we'll reach the destination that we're trying to get to together. And so I'm thankful that you had me on this morning. Thankful that I had the opportunity to serve on CanMed. Many thanks to my peers who put up with me on these calls, especially masked as a fox on Zoom sometimes. And you know, I'm thankful for the time with you this morning, Damian, and I'm excited about our July 1 start to legal sales. And I'm looking forward to this safe market that we have with low taxes and, you know, in a sustainable future in the cannabis sector.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Christina. It's been a joy to have you on Center Maryland's The Lobby Pod. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Have an awesome year, Damian.